welcome to Harp Column Podcast, taking you behind the stories in Harp Column from a practical harpist perspective. My name is Christina Finch, and I will be your guide to all things harp. Today's episode is brought to you by Harp Column Academy at harpcolumnacademy.com, an online learning site where you can watch lessons on repertoire and technique taught by the master teachers who have taught some of the best harpists in the world. Who exactly are these master teachers, you ask? No big deal. Just Lynn Asmus, Sarah Bullen, Maeve Gilchrist, Jamie Hafner, Judy Lohman, Isabel Perrin, Kim Robertson, Sunita Stanislow, and soon, Felice Pomeranz and Elizabeth Fontaine Binoche. Also, be sure to check out Harp Column Academy at-home summer camp sessions occurring from August 14th to 18th, taught by Lauren Hayes, Angelica Hairston, and Brett Barnwell. You get all this and so much more for only $49.99 for the year or $19.99 a month. A seriously amazing deal. Go check it out. You'll agree. Episode 24 features harpist Anne Sullivan. Anne has been contributing to Harp Column for many years now and is an invaluable resource to all that know her. She's been featured in two of our episodes thus far and is back to speak with us again about her article series in progress, Student Scenarios, which takes an in-depth look at some of the difficult dilemmas, common stumbling blocks, and unique situations harp teachers encounter. The July-August issue of Harp Column brought us the fourth installation of this series, and if you haven't read them yet, I strongly encourage you to do so. Anne is truly a master at her craft and has spent years honing and perfecting her approach to teaching. Whether you are a student or teacher, I have no doubt Anne's writing will speak to you. To begin, I asked Anne to share with me her experience writing these articles and to give me an idea of her overarching pedagogical beliefs.
I've had such a good time putting it together because it's sort of a different way for me to think about what it is that I do and what it is that I've experienced as a teacher and a student. And as a colleague, I'll have colleagues who say, you know, I have this student who's driving me crazy. We all say that from time to time. You know, there's not anything necessarily wrong with a student. It's just that there's an issue. And it's usually a communication issue or a difference in focus where the student wants one thing and the teacher wants something else. And they're both sort of headed in the same direction, but working at cross purposes to do it. It usually comes down to that. But as I said, it's been fun for me to explore this different way of thinking about teaching and what we do. I started piano when I was 4. I love playing the piano. And I stopped taking lessons when I was 12 because my piano teacher said, you're going to become a harpist. You need to stop piano lessons and focus, which was one of the most powerful lessons on being a responsible teacher. You know, she had been part of getting me to the harp. I mean, I'd always wanted to play the harp, but they made me take piano first. And when my parents were asking my piano teacher about a harp teacher, she was the one who sent me to Miss Costello. And I was one of the best piano students in her studio at that point, but she knew that that wasn't my path. And for a teacher to recognize that and to actively be a part of my focus was, you know, I mean, it meant a lot right then, but it continues to mean a lot as I teach and hope to be that kind of teacher for my students, the kind that says, you know, you're really great. I'm doing a good job for you, but this is where you need to go, whether it's going off to medical school or, you know, switching focus in another way or switching teachers, you know, and I think that kind of generosity is one of the things that in my mind makes a good teacher. Generosity, not just for the sake of giving, but really for the sake of helping a student fulfill their greatest potential.
Anyone who's read Anne's writing through Harp Column or on her personal blog, harpmastery.com, likely knows about Anne's struggles as a young harpist to get her head and hands in the game. For me, the personal stories are the most telling when it comes to really getting to know someone, and Anne is always so willing to share of herself. I asked her to tell me a little about these struggles and what led her to, as she calls it, harp happiness.
I was studying with Madeline Costello. So from the time I was 10 or so, I was studying with an absolute harp star, but I never really figured out how to practice. So that came to bite me in a couple big ways and a couple big points in my learning. When I was about 16, I first realized that this was a huge problem and that I had to fix it. My teacher sent me to Maine, to the Salcedo Harp Colony in Maine, where I studied with Alice and Jan Shalafu. And that first summer, all of a sudden, I figured out how to practice because I just had to. I knew that was my job. I knew that I wasn't going to go any further if I didn't. It seems like, you know, a really dumb thing to have to learn when you've been playing the harp. At that point, I'd been playing for 8 years. I was playing, you know, big pieces and good stuff, and I had a direction, but that was a real stumbling block for me because things had come easily and I hadn't had to buckle down and do detail work. And that worked for a couple of years. Then in my first year at Curtis, things went downhill and I didn't know why. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do, but I had made my approach very, very narrow. Previously, my idea of playing the harp had been very broad. I mean, you just get in there and you sort of, you know, wide brush everything and you have this great time and you play this fabulous music and that's good enough. And then I realized, okay, it's not good enough. I actually have to fix things and I have to get notes right and I have to do all this detail work. The pendulum swung too far the other direction. So I had to figure out what was going to be essential for me at that point. And that was a do or die moment because my teacher couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I was leaving every lesson in tears. It was hideous. And, you know, it was down to the point of where if you don't figure it out, you're not coming back. I took the summer off. I did not go to a harp camp, did not study harp, did not take lessons. And I took my only non-music job in my life. I was a delivery person for the pharmacy across the street. So I learned how to drive a Jeep and deliver medicine for 6 weeks. During that time, I went back to playing the piano. And my piano teacher at Curtis was having no problem with me, you know, the secondary piano teacher. She thought I was really good. Well, I mean, I could play and I enjoyed practicing. So, you know, I was way ahead of some of the other kids there. So I figured, all right, if I can do this on the piano, why can't I do it on the harp? What happened for me that summer that I didn't discover had happened for quite a while was that I started really being purposeful about what I needed to do to get the results I wanted, because I was never, still am not, the sort that can just sit down there and practice for hours without a reason to do it. I realized that if I knew what I was trying to do, every single minute I was practicing, every single repetition, it kept me focused and got me the results I was looking for because I was directing my energy in a purposeful way. It was interesting and it was fun. And it was a big time saver because I didn't waste time doing things I didn't need to do. Kept me focused on doing what I did need to do to exactly get the results I wanted. So, you know, then comes a long span of time where I just sort of refined that system and sort of made it into a system and learned over decades to help my students through the same thing and to help them find what was going on. So really what I ended up doing in my teaching was leveraging a couple of things that I'm really good at. I'm really good at diagnosing problems and figuring out how to fix them.
You're listening to Harp Column Podcast, episode 24. You can read more harp news, feature stories, and subscribe to the print magazine at www.harpcolumn.com. Did you know that before Anne was appointed as professor of harp at the University of Delaware, she taught music theory and oral skills at the Curtis Institute of Music? No big deal, right? Wrong. Very big deal. I was curious about how exactly this job came about.
Oh, that was an accident. I was one of those Curtis students. I mean, Curtis is an intense experience. And even though after my first year, I really enjoyed the rest of my time there and did pretty well. You know, I did okay after that. That was fine. By the time I graduated, I was, you know, walked out the door and said, phew, I'm done with that. I'm never going back. That was, you know, May of 1 year. April of the following year, I got a call from my former theory teacher saying, how would you like to come back and teach some classes? Well, at that point, I was no longer a student and I was a starving music graduate and looking for jobs and playing everything I could play and taking the students that came my way. And this looked like heaven on a plate. It started as a couple of hours a week. the years started slipping by and I was teaching a lot of the theory classes. I was teaching counterpoint and keyboard harmony and fundamentals courses and all kinds of stuff. And I was essentially full-time there. And I did that for 19 years. And that was an eye-opener for me in a different way. First of all, I discovered that I really did enjoy those kinds of subjects for the same kinds of reasons that I enjoy harp teaching. I like getting in there and seeing how I can connect a student to this material, which isn't easy because Curtis students just want to be practicing and playing. They don't want to be doing theory and ear training, right? Just like music students everywhere. But I always would have a student come back after they graduated and say, I didn't realize I was going to be using this stuff. And it's just so exciting. And thank you so much. And that's the teacher's reward, right? You get that. So I enjoyed creating the systems I needed to teach that and working in a curriculum, which I think helped my harp teaching because we don't always have, or we're not always given the pedagogical resources to create an organized curriculum or a system for learning for our students.
So do you bring theory into your teaching with your students now?
Yes, I do, but it's very individualized to the students. And this may be heresy, especially considering my really strong theory background and the fact that I do believe that it's an essential building block for every musician. I mean, you can't get away from that. And even more so ear training than theory. But it's just so essential as just part of being a musician. Having said that, my other belief is that when it comes to theory particularly, you only need as much as you need. I don't insist that my students take extra theory courses unless that's what appeals to them and that's going to be part of their life with the harp. I do think that there are essential pieces of theory that all of my students need to know. They need to know their major minor keys, key signatures, scales. They need to know basic chord structure, triads and seventh chords. And of course, then there's the ear training component of note reading and rhythm skills and that sort of stuff. But beyond that, I don't think that the further flights of music theory are necessary for everybody. And the way I prefer to teach those things, the theory and ear training elements, are at the harp. The theory makes more sense when we connect it to what we're doing. The theory studies work, and not just playing scales or chords, but making sure that when we're playing and practicing, we're connecting the notes that we're trying to play with the underlying patterns that form them, that we're thinking about the harmony that's being represented or the key or the scale degree of the notes, just something that gives the notes meaning beyond the dot on the page.
Like most of us, Anne has taught throughout her career, but as I read her articles, it becomes more and more clear to me that she is one of the rare people who seem to have truly found their calling in life. Not everyone who teaches is good at it. And as a relatively new teacher myself, I find her story, her path, and her ideas both relatable and incredibly inspirational. My teacher in high school, Barbara Chapman, once told me, "The job you're meant to have will come to you. It might not be what you expect, but if you are open, willing, and enthusiastic, you will find joy, fulfillment, and meaning in whatever it might be."
I never set out to be a harp teacher. I think I set out to have the teaching be an adjunct to my playing, the same way that I saw my own teacher, where teaching has a couple different meanings, I think, for a performer. And it still has those for me now, in that I learn through teaching. I think most of us who teach realize that when you start, especially when you first start teaching, it's like, wow, how did I do that? How did people help me do this? And how can I help my students do this? So you learn a lot about your own approach to the instrument and what you were taught and what you still want to know. We learn by teaching. And in that sense, it's really exciting to do. But also, I think the fact that in this historical generational way, you know, where my teacher gave me the information that was passed on to her by her teacher. Now that would have been Salzedo, and think of the information that he got from his teacher, Hasselman, and where all those things came from. And you just sort of work yourself back the harp and musical genealogy and you think, wow, look at the musical roots that I had. Sharing that information, the way it was shared with me, is for me a really, really important part of teaching.
Do you know your harp lineage? If not, Harp Column has your back. Head over to www.harpcolumn.com and look back at the July 2015 issue at an article titled One Big Happy Family, written by Kilo Walton. If this episode hasn't convinced you to immediately sit down and absorb all of the amazing output that Anne Sullivan offers to our community, then nothing will. For me, reading her writing is like having someone tell me my life story. That dog analogy from the first installment of Student Scenarios from the December 2016 issue described my learning style in a way I'd never been able to articulate before. For anyone who's interested, I'm totally a greyhound. To close things out, I asked Anne how much longer we might expect to see these ridiculously relevant and useful student scenario installments.
I know that I'll be finishing out this year, but they've already asked if I would continue into next year. But if we're going to continue this series, I could also use input. So if there are teachers out there that have questions or issues, or students who are having problems with teachers, you know, because it works that way too, right? So I'd love to, you know, just have everybody email me, let me know what's going on, and I'll see how I can work that into a column.
That's it for our 24th episode. Many thanks to Anne Sullivan for speaking with us. If you have an idea for an upcoming installment of Student Scenarios, you can email Anne at anne@harpmastery.com. That's Anne with an E at the end. To find out more about Anne and her teaching, visit her website and blog, harpmastery.com. Music for today's episode comes from the Seattle-based folk pop duo March to May, featuring harpist Elizabeth Wesch and Darren Guyaz playing guitar and piano on their new CD, Through the Night. Reviewed in the July-August issue of Harp Column by Allison Young. To learn more about Harp Column, please visit www.harpcolumn.com and subscribe today to gain access to current and past issues, as well as a lot of great web content. My name is Dr. Christina Finch, and we at Harp Column hope that you have a spectacular week.